record the spoken word introduction to the podcast.
Still?
Yeah, it's only a few lines, but I'm having anxiety about it.
Do you know what it is?
Yeah, it goes...
It's good, so you don't have to write it. Oh, yeah, let me hear it.
It goes, and the podcast begins with a shoehorned reference to Columbia House Party.
That's it?
And the podcast begins with a shoehorned reference to Columbia House Party. Jake, what's up, man?
That was fun.
Yeah. When was the last time you did that much voice acting?
I had an audition today for a commercial that was one line, so a long time ago.
Damn. How'd that go?
I don't know. It was one line, but I think it was okay. That was the most voice acting I've done in like months.
Do you want to give us the line? Do you want to workshop it? I know it's after the fact, so it won't help, but I don't know. We could.
I'm not saying this to be shitty. I genuinely don't know if I'm allowed.
Oh, okay.
Wow. I would otherwise.
No, it's fine, man. It's, you know, we'll all, when we hear your voice on the next, like, herpes ad or whatever, whatever Joey Tribbiani maybe, thing.
It's not that interesting. Friends, I don't know. It's not that interesting. Maybe I'll get it and you'll know. Maybe not.
That's the hope. You will get it. I'm sure you killed it, man.
I probably won't, but we'll see.
I mean, more than I killed our intro. You're certainly a better voice actor than me.
I enjoyed it.
All right, guys. Welcome. This is Columbia House Party. I'm Blake Murphy. This is Jake Goldsby. This is episode 40 of the podcast. Wow. Yeah. Our podcast is now officially Creepy at the Bar. Damn. 40 in. If you are listening to this, which you are, because otherwise I wouldn't be able to talk to you. Thank you, first of all, for coming along with us. If you're new, welcome. And we encourage you to go back and check out older episodes that you may like. If you're listening to a Say Anything episode, if you're still around with us, thank you for that as well. And if you're one of our Patreon listeners, thank you, especially if you'd like to be patreon.com/Columbia House Party. Failing that, check us out on Twitter and Instagram, rate, review, subscribe, all that stuff. Jake, how are you, man? Other than voice acting auditions aside, which I imagine were quite stressful to do mid-quarantine.
I mean, it's all just sitting in sort of a box and speaking. Like, voice acting's not really for commercial. It's not a social activity, really, anyway. So it was fine.
Yeah. Well, that's great. How's everything else going?
I'm okay. I have a song stuck in my head because of this episode that isn't by the band we're doing, but it's been driving me nuts all day, so that's fun. Because
are we going to talk about it, or you just want to bring it up now?
Yeah, because I think you know it. I have Say Anything Else by Cartel stuck in my head.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's all I can, for some reason, instead of any of the many songs I genuinely love by the band Say Anything, I just have this song I know from a Madden soundtrack.
Yeah, I listened to Chroma, which is my favorite Cartel album, and an album that I think we briefly talked about this with Taylor Markarian in the All American Rejects episode. It is, it's very good, and it's one of the ones looking back on that era that I'm surprised didn't get bigger. Really good. Also,
yeah,
I can already promise you that Cartel will not be the only band from that era that we talked about with Taylor that will get brought up at some point in this podcast. I will not stop. You already know who, but I'll save it. I'll pocket it for now. Say Anything Else by Cartel. Great song, though. Chroma's awesome.
Yeah. Really good song. Great chorus.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we're not segueing into a Cartel episode.
Surprise!
In retrospect, it would have been a really good transition out of this one.
That's true. But
we could have done Chroma.
We're dumb.
No, it's fine. I have a spicy segue to next week's episode.
Okay.
Queued up for you at the end. Luckily it's at the end of the podcast because you probably just hang up on me. But we'll get
I
mean, there.
Pulling back the curtain, I only like 50% of the time know what our connections are going to be before Blake sells me them. So I'm excited. It's always fun with this mystery.
Yeah, for anyone who doesn't know, we split the episode like who's leading them 50-50. And if it's only the episodes I lead that Jake gets to see my notes ahead of time, because otherwise I have more limited notes and Jake has to send his. So and then the album intros are sometimes a surprise in those cases too, right?
And I don't want to shock anyone, but Blake's notes are better than mine.
I don't know if that's true.
It's definitely true.
Patreon supporters could let us know because they get access to those research notes.
That's true.
We got to talk about today's album.
And more.
Instead of talking about Chroma. Last week, We opened up the Sad Teen Handbook with Dashboard Confessional. This week, we, as promised at the end of last week, we are now opening up the Sarcastic, Intentionally Disengaged Emo Teen Handbook. Despite not sounding a ton alike, there were a lot of connections to get us from last week to this week. These two bands shared a label at Dine Alone at one point. They toured together with Ben Lee in the summer of 2016. And today's band were even included on a Consequence of Sound playlist of bands inspired by Dashboard Confessional back in February. That playlist also included former episode topics Lil Peep and Juice WRLD, and possible future episode topics The Academy Is and Julian Baker. New York Times even said this band is, quote, unabashedly echoes Dashboard in a 2006 profile, mini profile, which, no, they don't. They don't really sound like that at all. But, you know, they also didn't reach quite the cultural relevance of Dashboard necessarily, but they, and particularly the lead singer, have carved out a nice long-term niche spanning 8 albums and 20 years. They check off a Columbia House Party staple also as a band that has a truly wild amount of member turnover. And so we get our boomboxes held high, we dust off our best John Cusack charm, and we dive into the pop-punk equivalent of a tongue-in-cheek rom-com. Jake, what do you have for us today?
So I sort of mentioned this quickly at the end of the episode last week, but if Dashboard Confessional were sort of the Blake heavy emo band of the 2000s, or if you want to extend that to a Taking Back Sunday, that would also apply. The maybe not as much overlap as sometimes, but my big mid 2000s emo album that I think is still my favorite. We'll get into this a little bit, but when quarantine started, I made a big Spotify playlist of all of my favorite albums from the last like 50 years or something. I was really bored. Called Quarantine-age Dirtbag. It's on my Spotify if you want to find it. But I didn't put this album for the year entry that I could have. And in retrospect, I think I should have, because every time I go back to it, I find something new and I really like it. And I have a lot of personal connections to it. So this is that album. This is a Real Boy and Was a Real Boy by Say Anything.
That song is Belt from Say Anything's Is a Real Boy. And yes, Jake, I had it in my notes to ask you. I wasn't 1,000% sure. We are doing Is a Real Boy and Was a Real Boy together?
Yeah, well, was a Real Boy will come up because of the reissue, yeah. But we are mostly focusing on Is a Real Boy.
All right. At this part of the podcast, we usually tell you why we wanted to do it. Say Anything hold a bit of a weird place, in my opinion, because despite being like a clear product of the pop punk boom, with lyrics that are made possible kind of by the emo explosion and you know, taking that sarcastic pop punk tilt to another level, they do come off and like stand out looking back and with their current stuff, as like fairly original. Like you can tell immediately that a Say Anything song is Say Anything. And then, you know, as I mentioned before, they're also interesting because they've lasted 2 decades despite this insane amount of turnover and only like middle tier commercial performance. Yeah, they're fun. This is going to be a good episode. This is going to be a weird episode. Jake, why did you want to do Say Anything?
I think because, like I said, this is sort of, everyone has their mid-2000s emo band. If you are in our generation and Say Anything, or at least Say Anything for this album and this reissue EP, were mine. I also kind of have a weird relationship with them in the sense that I love this album so much and the rest of their discography doesn't do a ton for me, but I do like the fact that it's always ambitious and always weird and always trying things that the genre didn't necessarily try, which I think is one of the reasons I liked them back in the day, because as I've said before about how I was sort of afraid or embarrassed of liking the emo pop punks or whatever, Say Anything kind of allowed me to have my cake and eat it too, I think, a little bit, because they were a little rockier, a little weirder, a little more sarcastic. Definitely a lot more references to going to shul, which I appreciate. And that, so I sort of felt like they were mine a little bit in 2005, 2006. So I think that's why I wanted to do this one.
Yeah. I also, you know, this album is like, it stood out to me as the easy one to pick. In Defense of the Genre would have been possibly a good one too, but that's already what this entire podcast is just In Defense of the Genre. So
that album also requires like 3 episodes.
Yeah. I mean, this one almost did too. Last week's album was 10 songs and 29 minutes. Yeah, this one is 21 songs and 86 minutes.
Fair point.
Of course, your mid-2000s emo album is the one that has no song like shorter than 4 minutes and is 20 tracks long.
In my defense, Is a Real Boy is only like 54 minutes long.
It's only when
you know, it's a quick one.
Yeah, it's only the reissues with sides E and F of the album that get you too long. All right, guys, we're going to dive into Is a Real Boy and What's a Real Boy by Say Anything after this.
Say Anything. Were formed in the year 2000, cue the Conan O'Brien song, by Max Bemis and 4 friends. They were known as Say Anything, which is Say Anything without the space in between the 2 words. According to an archive biography of the band that was written by Bemis, which I will be leaning on quite heavily today, he said, "We have existed since Kobe started playing drums over the horrible songs I wrote about girls while attending high school in Los Angeles, California. Being the egomaniacal singer type, I proceeded to kick out and or drive away pretty much anyone else who joined the band, so there were a ton of lineup changes, yet somehow Kobe and I ended up selling a lot of our self-released recorded CD. Soon, all these strange children started repeatedly attending our live shows to tell their friends until we garnered a motley crew of a fan base." And if that quote doesn't give you a sense of how Max Bemis writes and talks about himself, I don't know what does. They released the Junior Varsity EP in 2000, the In Your Dreams EP in 2001, and Baseball, an album by Say Anything in 2002, which was their first full-length LP, and not an album I listen to a lot, but I love the title. I don't know why. I think just calling your album Baseball is really funny.
I also like the name of an album, colon, an album.
Yeah. By the band that you are buying the album for. Yes. I also enjoy that.
Yes. Do you think, and I don't mean to put you on the spot, this is strictly you guessing here, not asking you to report, that Modern Baseball named themselves having appreciated Say Anything's album title Baseball, and they were like, you know what, this, but we're going to modernize it?
That I don't know, but I won't lie, when I first heard of Modern Baseball, that was where my mind went.
Yeah, me too. It's not the case. Modern Baseball got their name off of like some book they saw, unfortunately. Oh, it would have been a nice Say Anything shout out, though. Anything, by the way, is, I believe Max has admitted it's a shout out to the Cusack movie in the past.
Oh, has he actually admitted that?
I believe so, yeah.
I mean, I feel like there's a lot of Lloyd Dobler, Max Bemis crossover throughout his career. So,
yeah, that's fair.
In 2002, upon the release of Baseball, they changed their name to Say Anything as two words, as though today. And speaking of good titles, released the Minora Majora EP online, which I can't say without laughing. Baseball and the EP sort of took off, as Bemis said, amongst sort of the underground emo crowd, which caused a major bidding war for their services. Drive Thru Records, who we talked about last week, called Max Bemis the next Bob Dylan, which I think we will talk about someone else who was called that in a couple weeks. In 2003, they signed with Doghouse Records, an independent label. About that, in this semi-autobiography post, Bemis said, being fresh-faced teenagers, as well as the fact we were playing with bands like The Promise Ring and like Rooney, it wasn't a surprise that all these big scary labels saw us as a safe bet and tried to get us to sell out our souls to them. They also told us we could be the next Blink-182 if we gave them our firstborn children and agreed to do whatever they wanted. That didn't sound so hot, so we chose to be totally underground, in quotes, and signed to Doghouse Records. They've put out such obscure, borderline DIY records such as the All-American Rejects. So Bemis just shitting on our entire show discography already, and we haven't even started the podcast really.
Yeah, I mean, look, this is going to be a trend with Bemis.
Yes. So after signing with Doghouse, Max Bemis began attempting to write the songs that would eventually form Is a Real Boy. He went to the studio with Florida producer Paul Trust. They recorded three songs that were not released. Although one of the songs, entitled Spider Song, would later appear on a Doghouse compilation, and I believe that is the same version, or this at least the same song, that eventually appears on Is a Real Boy. Bemis kind of struggled with writing this record. I think you can hear that a lot in the record itself. He said, during the lonely, depressing period of time when I dropped out of college to prepare for writing and recording our first record for Doghouse, I thought often about what the point of my life was. Was I doomed to remain yet another earnest, upper-middle-class bred wine rocker? After all, hidden deep in the recesses of my mind, I had hidden the notion that I could do something incredible and different, that I could be someone like Warhol or Jesus. I had to write an album that was revolutionary in its content and presentation. Finally, one night, it hit me. That was what my record had to be about. The artistic struggle. Because we know what's real. It's the struggle. Bemis originally intended this album to be a rock opera, which is very fitting for us, but not a rock opera in the Black Parade sense. A rock opera with a full script, narration, cast of characters, and all stage directions and all those things. It was tentatively titled Zona, I assume after the state of Arizona. However, Max Bemis became overwhelmed by the process of writing and playing most of the instruments and had a breakdown. He told Alternative Press, I literally lost my mind while we were recording. The breakdown was precipitated by a mockumentary discussed by Bemis and their producer, Tim O'Hare. Bemis's condition led him to believe that he was being secretly filmed for the mockumentary. The situation culminated in him walking the streets of Brooklyn, thinking he was being filmed while encountering friends who were actually strangers.
Now, sorry, can I just jump in there? He has since been diagnosed with bipolar, right?
I believe so, yes. I believe has had a few incidents and episodes as well, but I believe he's in a good place and doing well now from what I've read, which is good to hear because there's some scary stuff for him, I think, especially around this time.
Yeah, and I imagine there's a ton of pressure that doesn't sit well with, I mean, any mental health issues, but in particularly that. So that's,
Yeah,
I know he's been open about like self-medicating a lot too.
Yeah.
Yeah, tough. I'm glad he's doing better.
Yeah, and I feel like he was a big self-pressure guy as well. So
yeah, it certainly seems that way from quotes from him.
Of the since-abandoned rock opera, he said, the plot centered around a neurotic collegiate punk rocker based on myself who is imbued with a strange power that causes his inner thoughts to burst out of his mouth uncontrollably, backed by full instrumentation. He becomes the unwilling superhero of all things rock. However, the process playing all the instruments, except for drums and singing all day, turned into such an intense draining process that I ended up wandering the streets of Brooklyn in a psychotic daze and getting thrown into the loony bin for 2 weeks. Needless to say, that sucked, so we parted with the idea of the plot portion of the record. And I have to say, obviously, his mental health takes precedence over anything and his safety, but that idea for a record sounds fucking awesome, and I kind of wish we had gotten to hear it. But
well, that, Jake, you should check out the comic series Polarity, which is a comic series Bemis has written about a bipolar superhero that sounds fairly similar.
Well, there you go. See, I told you your notes were better than mine. They then scrapped the concept and decided to make a more straightforward album, which is the album we know today. However, Bemis retained
this his... This is a straightforward album?
I mean, comparatively to a rock opera with stage direction.
Yeah, sure, I guess. Yeah, I mean, comparatively, but compared to anything else, it's not. But all right. Sorry.
In 2011, looking back on the album and talking to alternative press, he said there is a healthy mix of anthemic quality and then the quirky, odd, neurotic music that's more of an offshoot of Queen or the Beatles or the Stones, that kind of an influence versus Foo Fighters and more anthemic big rock and roll, which I don't know if I agree with, considering all the gang vocals and sing-alongs on this record, but I kind of see where he meant and I can see what he's going for with that. The album was produced by Tim O'Hare, as well as Bemis, and the album became, to quote Max Bemis, slathered in scene hype, not so ironically the very thing the album parodies. Looking back on the record on a Rank Your Records column with Vice in 2014, he ranked Israel Boy as his favorite Say Anything record, but did say he's uncomfortable listening to it today because he hates his voice. Listening to it back, he said, I think it's great for what it is, but I can't listen to it now because it was over 10 years ago, and I remember being so perfectionist about it that I would not even do less than 4 takes for each vocal part. I would sit there with the producer, and we would just take everything apart. I needed it to be just perfect, or what I thought was perfect at the time.
That sounds exhausting.
Yeah. It was released for the first time on Doghouse Records in 2004. It sold 20,000 copies independently, and once again, the band became a target of a major label bidding war. They would then sign with J Records to reissue the album in 2006, along with a second disc of songs called Was a Real Boy, which became sort of, I think, how the record is most widely known. About signing with a big label like J Records, Max Bemis said, we and J Records decided to partner up to see just how many kids we could turn on to this self-deprecating mess of an album. My main motivation was to further my idea that no mainstream music fan is worth less than somebody who reads about our band on Buddyhead or some live journal. I am prepared for the chance of sellout, 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 and more than willing to literally spit back in the face of anyone who would desert me because I signed to a major label. My music is not something to be owned by a core audience. It is made to be appreciated universally.
It's something to hear him say that, given like what the tone of the actual album is and what the lyrical content is.
Yeah,
like it certainly seems like a change of heart from the time he was writing Is a Real Boy to the time they signed on with that label, because, you know, so much of the album is like kind of turning the finger against the industry and a lot of that stuff.
Yeah, he certainly seems like a guy, especially at this time, and also into in defense of the genre as well, who very much wants his music to be heard by as many people as possible, while also hating the vehicles that allow that to happen, which I understand and I don't begrudge him for, but an interesting dichotomy, to use a fancy word. When the album was re-released in 2006, it spawned the band's first hit and first legitimate single, which in very Say Anything fashion, Max Bemis called an intense and oddly uplifting rocker about a relationship torn by the Holocaust. It was a semi-autobiographical song as it tells the story of Bemis's grandparents, both of whom were Holocaust survivors. That song is, of course, Alive with the Glory of Love.
Take you.
might think releasing, building your first single around a song about the Holocaust is a bizarre choice, but as you mentioned earlier, this is also a band that had the EP Minora Majora and an album called Hebrews. So not exactly surprising. Also, you know, when you get beneath the it's about the Holocaust level, it's about his grandparents who survived the Holocaust. And it's a very nice song through that lens.
Yeah. And I have to say, like, I am not a religious person, nor even a practicing person, but I definitely found when I was younger, maybe unconsciously and more so in retrospect now, there was something, I think, to being like 16, 17 and hearing an emo band sing so, not even frankly, at least not till later, I guess, but about sort of things that I grew up hearing a lot about and have family involved in, if we're talking the Holocaust, and even just his like passing references to Shul and Wow, I Can Get Sexual Too. There is a, it wasn't something, unless I was listening to different stuff, but it wasn't something I feel like I really ever heard when I was younger. And I do think it drew me to him or related to him, even if it was just on an unconscious level.
Yeah, I mean, for me, obviously, there's none of that. You know, I'm a Gentile and I grew up in an area with a very, very small, if any, Jewish population. Now, looking back on it, I find it immensely interesting. And like, I didn't really like, I never like caught that necessarily listening to it when I was younger. But yeah, it's cool. And it's, you know, it actually digging in on the actual meaning of the song reminded me of a play I saw once called Bad Jews, which...
I haven't heard of that one.
We all have different ways to honor our families and our histories and our legacies. And in this case, and in the case of that play, religions, you know, Jake, the character you portrayed in Bad Jews, went one way with it. And Max Bemis went this way. I tend to agree more with Max Bemis's, but
yeah, you know, I think
that's,
I do too.
That's the whole, that's the primary discussion point coming out of Bad Jews. Maybe in a theater sometime again when we're allowed to have theaters. Who knows?
Yeah, maybe. We'll see.
You got to plug your stuff more, Jake. I talk about the Raptors too often.
I feel like I'm getting too old to do that show a fourth time, though.
Maybe. But maybe, I don't know, maybe we can expand the script.
Maybe. Yeah, we'll write the sequel.
Add more characters. It can be like one of those anthology shows where it's the same actors every time, but they play different characters.
It'll just be Israel Boy as a rock opera. Which is how I used to listen to the album when I was in high school and try to piece it together.
Yeah, I mean, I could get behind that for sure.
Bemis told Alt Press about Alive at the Glory of Love. I thought about what it would be like to be in love and separated from the person you love, because these times are just as dire in a way. Anything can happen in a war and terrorist attacks and cynicism and all these actors who oppose love, which definitely sounds like a post 9/11 emo quote of the time. For better and for worse. This song was a pretty big success in the underground emo scene, and especially as looking back on it today. In a top 100 emo songs of all time article for Vulture, Ian Cohen named this as the 59th greatest emo song of all time. I'm sure we could do an entire episode on that top 100 ranking, but if anyone is curious, Never Meant by American Football was number one. Ian Cohen said that while Neutral Milk Hotels in the Aeroplane Over the Sea constructed something similar as a naive and illogical fever dream divorced from the space-time continuum, Max Bemis considered the experience of his Holocaust survivor grandparents while writing Alive with the Glory of Love, and visualized how the primal, procreative urge can still thrive when dead bodies are piling up by the thousands in front of you. He said, Is a Real Boy announces itself with a song of rebellion, but there were better ones to come. When Bemis and his mates shout, Treblinka is alive with the glory of love, in the face of certain death, he makes the unthinkable truly believable. Which I actually really like as a comment about this song.
Yeah, it's also, I find this song stands out from, like, in contrast to the rest of the album, where, like, Bemis is so weird lyrically and like you said, spends a lot of the time poking fun at the genre, and like, it's clear he's like irony poisoned at a level, at a 2020 Twitter yeah, level.
Absolutely.
But this song is like this one really highlights that underneath some of that sarcasm and cynicism is like a really effective and creative songwriter. And it's, you know, that's a really hard song to write, I would imagine, even if it's like immensely personal to you and your family, and like to do so so creatively and so effectively, not just in a song that was well written, but a song that's also has a popularity to it, is Bemis is nothing if not creative and willing to try different things. And it really, you know, that's the probably the hardest type of song to do that with. And he pretty much nails it there.
Yeah. And I also think that it's sort of, it's like, I don't love this term, but I'm going to use it anyway. It's kind of like a perfect miracle of a song in a lot of ways. Because if you look at the subject matter, the lyricism in it, the fact that it's kind of just an accessible sing-along rock song, but like the chorus is so simple yet so perfect, it definitely belongs on that top 100 list. And it really is like this weird collection of things that maybe shouldn't work together but do, which I also think could describe this album as a whole.
Yeah, there's a lot of different things, which is I think, are we pivoting to the rest of the album now? Can I take us there?
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, I think the rest of the album is just like you said, it's a lot of things, a lot of different things working together well. And I feel like even though this is like very much a pop punk / emo record, there are like 8 different genres that show up on this album. Like, I know I won't jump ahead to one of the songs I know you want to talk about, but like Yellow Cat / Red Cat is A Cat Named Virtuti on Adderall. And then you have Spider Song, which is basically a grunge song. And then you have, you know, If I Can Take Us to an Orgy of Critics at this point, like that's a hardcore song. They're all over the place. And it flows kind of abruptly at times, but it all fits together really well, which is, again, another difficult thing to do. And maybe is something where I don't really remember what my initial opinions of Say Anything were, but like I'd imagine coming to it for the first time, they were probably a band that took some time to get into, or at least to like sit down with the whole album with, because it does kind of jump around like that sonically, and like especially relative to the rest of the genre.
Yeah, and like I think when I was in high school, I was a big put albums on shuffle guy after I'd listened to them a few times. Ugh. But this one was always front to back. Like this one had the flow. This one has its many, many genre experimentation. And I don't know exactly how this one is talked about in the R emo circles in 2020, but I feel like for all the deserved praise and nostalgia and looking back that the Black Parade gets for its experimentations with what emo and pop punk could be in the mid 2000s, I feel like this one deserves the same praise and credit for that in a very different way. Whereas My Chemical Romance obviously went very Queen and high concept and symphonic in a lot of ways, that with Black Parade, I feel like Say Anything really went the more like alternative rock way. Like this is not a perfect comparison and I don't fully agree with it, but if Queen is to the Black Parade for emo, I feel like REM is kind of to this, but louder and weirder.
Yeah, I can get there. I'll give it to you.
Yeah. You know what I mean.
Should we give an example of it getting a little louder here?
Yeah, let's do that.
This is An Orgy of Critics. Your family in a box.
that was, I remember hearing that song for the first time I went through this album and not being really sure where it, if like I had messed up and like the wrong track got onto the record or something. But,
well, also cause like, you know, I mentioned some of the like different styles all over the first half of the album. And then where this one goes after this, like just makes Orgy of Critics stick out even more. Like the next two songs are the two most emo songs on the album. Yeah. I think.
Absolutely. I think what's also both impressive and interesting is that Bemis wrote every single song on the album, which speaks to his talent as a songwriter at this time and also throughout his career. The only one he is not the sole credited songwriter on is Metal Now, which is on Was a Real Boy, which was written by him and Casper Adams. To your point about the album going a little more typically emo, there's also a couple of acoustic-y, not quite Dashboard-sounding songs, just because it's not really what he does, but I Want to Know Your Plans and A Walk Through Hell, I think, spoke to, I don't know if it was how intentional this was or if they were just songs he wrote for the album, but they do seem to, that like young, scene-y crowd that he didn't really want to appeal to, I feel like those two songs, especially A Walk Through Hell, really sort of put him in that genre.
Yeah, I'd probably include Slowly Through a Vector there as well. Like, that yeah. one's a lot more sarcastic. Like, they literally, to do the fast and slow, like, Pixies thing, they literally sing it. We're fast and slow, fast and slow.
That's true, yeah.
But at least the earlier parts of that song are like, that's when it's like, okay, maybe that New York Times piece that I mentioned, blurb, where it's like, okay, they echo Dashboard. I'm like, okay, this must have been the song that they listened to then.
Yeah.
And then on the songs that don't necessarily sound emo, but are emo in spirit, Every Man Has a Molly is like, I think what non-pop punk fans thought every pop punk love song was like.
Yeah, I've always wondered about that.
Because it's kind of like half parody of, I think it's half parody.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I have never been sure how tongue-in-cheek it is.
Right, and that makes it kind of tough to go back and listen to, because if we give Bemis the benefit of the doubt that he's poking fun at this style of song, which I think we can do because, like, the song is about a girl leaving him for his, because of the content of his songs. So, like, I feel like there's a thick layer of irony there. If we give him that benefit of the doubt, then I really like this song because it's funny and amusing. But if we're going to assume that maybe Bemis just gets to use that as a cover because otherwise this song is just your typical shitty pop punk guy being pretty misogynistic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like it's really only a good song if we allow that Bemis is poking fun at this type of song.
Yeah. And it's even one that it always stands out to me when I listen to it. I think sticks out, I should say, to me when listening to this, because it is like, even if it is tongue-in-cheek and parodying it, which I agree with you, I think we can give him the benefit of the doubt. But even if it is, it doesn't really fit the theme of the record, which I find...
Also, there's just the general rule about like parody is that if you can't tell it's parody, it's bad parody.
Yeah.
And maybe this is like, maybe that's not a criticism of Bemis, because maybe back at the time it would have been more obvious and like, obviously, the current cultural climate doesn't allow for that kind of, you know, you'd have to be pretty heavy handed that you're doing parody to get away with something like that now. But yeah, maybe this is a case of me trying to apologize for him, you know, jumping through hoops a little bit because I liked that song back in the day. But it's at least like kind of funny if you give him that. But yeah, I don't know that it's it wouldn't be the only Say Anything song that they veered away from.
Totally.
In further years, which, by the way, is something we should talk about, but we're going to talk about it, and we're going to talk about Was a Real Boy after this. Jake, I just want you to know, before I kicked it to break there, I gave you finger guns with the after this. This is what you're missing with these remote recordings instead of being in the studio.
I love it.
after this with the finger guns. All right. Before we took that break, I mentioned that there was another Say Anything song that they've kind of veered away from in recent years. Jake, give it to us.
Yeah. So this would be the second single from the re-release. The only single, I believe, from Was a Real Boy. This one's got a white guy in the mid-2000s doing a rap music video, parody music video also, which
awful
hasn't aged particularly well. But Henry Winkler is in it, I think, pre the resurgence of Henry Winkler. So maybe we have Say Anything to thank for that. I mentioned this one a little bit earlier when talking about him casually referencing Shul. That song is Wow, I Can Get Sexual Too. However, we are not going to talk about the Was a Real Boy version of Wow, I Can Get Sexual Too, because as Blake correctly pointed out to me when we were prepping this album, there is a great, underlined great, mashup of Wow, I Can Get Sexual Too and Hotline Bling, which is a bunch of my worlds colliding for so many reasons. So this is the mashup of Wow, I Can Get Sexual Too and Hotline Bling.
You used to call me all night. You used to. To call me on my cell phone. Late night when you need my love. Call me on my cell phone. Late night when you need my love. And I know when that hotline bling, that can only mean one thing. I know when that hotline bling, that can only mean one thing.
If I die and go to hell real soon, it will appear to me as this room. And for eternity I'd lay in bed in my boxers half stone with a pillow under my head. I'd be chatting on the interweb. Maggots prey upon the living dead. I had no interest in the things she said. On the phone every day, all permanently in the hay.
That mashup comes via Captain Cuts. They're a DJ trio that has done, I mean, they're like a standard DJ trio, and their discography is, and production side stuff is very lengthy. You can Google them and surely you've heard some of their songs. But they've also done on SoundCloud twice two of these emo slash hip hop mashup mixtapes, which I think, since you like this one, Jake, I want to force you to do a bonus episode on.
I was going to say it took us 40 episodes to get to Drake. Surprised it took this long.
Yeah. Yeah. It's they're not all Drake, but they are. There are some really good ones. And if anyone listened to that and was like even partially like, oh, yeah, that might be something I'd listen to or want to hear more of. Their first one, especially, there might be three now that I think of it. But their first one was If You're Listening, It's Too Late. Is really good workout and running music because it's all your emo and pop punk favorites, but they get hip hop beats underneath them. So it's a little more up tempo and they're just like fun and interesting. Wow, I Can Get Sexual Too on its own. Not a song that holds up well without being mixed with Hotline Bling though, Jake.
No, I feel like it's one of those songs from this period where if you're not like really drunk with a group of people who also understand how it's aged, it's not a song that really should be on your playlist, I suppose, for lack of a better word.
Yeah. And to take us back to Every Man Has a Molly, you know, we talked about, well, okay, what if that one's sarcastic and what if it's a parody? Well, Wow, I Can Get Sexual Too was that. And Max has said in recent years it was, quote, a sarcastic caricature of someone I've never been. But despite that, you know, veil of it being a caricature or whatever, they have since retired it because it's basically about having phone sex with a minor and it's creepy and weird and it's no longer appropriate for this moment or any moment. So that one is that's out of the Say Anything canon. Or not canon, but if you saw them live, you certainly wouldn't hear it. And they have officially retired it.
Yes, which is probably for the best for everyone.
One more note on the mashup with Drake there from Captain Cuts. And this is maybe not I guess it's a similar note. I just wanted some place to say that on one of those Punk Goes Crunk compilations, Say Anything also have a really good cover of Got Your Money from ODB. So the Say Anything hip hop connections extend beyond the terrible video for Wow, I Can Get Sexual Too.
They even extend to a weird meeting that he told Vice about, where Max Bemis in 2014 or 2016 somehow ended up in Kanye West's studio and they played each other their songs. To quote Bemis, he said, "He played me his new shit and I played him Say Anything and we went back and forth. It was the most surreal thing and I don't know what it would be like to be in that room." That's all I'll say about that.
Yeah. This is like those Instagram live battles before they existed during quarantine.
Totally.
Also, have to assume Max Bemis is in a pole position for the vice presidency.
Be on that billboard.
Sorry, that's not something we should joke about. But
be on that billboard poll that went out. Anyway, moving on. We sort of alluded to this earlier, but there is a song that I want to talk about on Is a Real Boy that really goes to what we were talking about earlier with Max Bemis sort of being preoccupied with skewering the scene that he also seems to want to be a part of, which I find is interesting. He does this a lot throughout Say Anything's discography. There's a absolutely terrible lyric from a song I quite like from 2014's Hebrews that features both Gareth and Kim from Los Campesinos called Judas Decapitation. The lyric is, "American indie rock is a game of pricks." I hate that line. I always will hate that line. For those who don't know, the reference is a reference to a song by Guided by Voices called Game of Pricks. I've just always hated that line. I needed to talk about it to somebody, have a little therapy session. But it does.
I mean, what is this podcast for, if not that?
But that is a lyric from an album in 2014, which is 10 years after the making of Is a Real Boy. So it's clearly something that's been on his mind a lot. The song that we are talking about when we are referencing Bemis ripping apart the scene is the final track on Is a Real Boy, Admit It.
Admit It! Despite your pseudo-bohemian appearance and vaguely leftist doctrine of beliefs, you know nothing about art or sex that you couldn't read in any trendy New York underground fashion magazine. Prototypical nonconformist, you are a vacuous soldier of the thrift store Gestapo. You adhere to a set of standards and tastes that appear to be determined by an unseen panel of hipster judges. Bullshit! Giving the thumbs up and thumbs down to incoming and outgoing trends and styles of music and art. Go analog, baby. You're so postmodern. You're diving face forward into an antiquated past. It's disgusting. It's offensive. Don't stick your nose up in me. Yeah. What do you have to say for yourself? Whoa, 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 whoa. Yeah. What do you have to say for yourself? Whoa, 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 whoa. And I am done with this. I wanna taste the breeze of every great city. My car and my guitar. My car and my guitar. So you come to be made of these. Urges unfulfilled. Oh no, 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 no. When I'm dead, I'll rest. When I'm dead, I'll rest. Lay still. When I'm dead, I'll rest.
It would not take much to just rewrite that song for 2020, calling out performative, like, online wokeness instead.
Yeah. And also, like, I find this song so interesting because if it came out today, I would fucking hate it. I would find it so obnoxious. But I love this song. And I don't know how much of that is colored by nostalgia. But I think it's a well-written song. I just think it's so in-your-face obnoxious, which I do think is intentional.
Which, again, though, like, your intent is does not necessarily make for a free pass. Like, it's a pretty pretentious and up-its-own-ass song. But I'm with you. I like it despite itself.
Yeah. In that Rank Your Records column with Vice, Bemis said, "I love Admit It. I'm so proud that song was one of the first songs, and I don't think there's that many that acknowledge the whole facade of indie rock. That was before it became funny to make fun of hipsters, so I'm very proud of those things, even though in my own mind it's juvenile and there are a million better records by a million better bands." And I think because he has that mindset on it, it makes me feel better about it. He'd revisit the song as well on their album Anarchy, My Dear. He wrote a song called Admit It Again, which is more or less a direct sequel to the song. Kind of updated, also not really, but it's not as good as the original. I think you could argue, though, that this song is sort of the thesis statement for all of Say Anything as a whole, not just because it runs throughout their entire discography and throughout, there's a direct sequel to the song, but because it's sort of this push and pull that he has of wanting to be part of this scene while also making fun of it and pretty openly deriding it. And like, but then the next album is called In Defense of the Genre. So I just find him so interesting and all the albums so interesting, even though the ones I don't like as much.
Yeah, I guess we should talk about that now. Is A Real Boy is held up as one of kind of the bigger albums of this era, but Say Anything, like we mentioned off the top, you know, eight albums deep. They've been around. Max Bemis has been around for 20 years now with a rotating cast of people. So, Jake, how was this received and where did they go from there?
This album was quite well received at the time and has been held up as an album that was sort of monumental for the genre since. It is extremely hard to find on vinyl, though, because not many have been pressed. If you have one, let me know. It got a 99% on Absolute Punk, a 4.5 stars out of 5 from Punk News on the first release, and a 3.5 on re-release. I haven't read them, but I assume it's because it's on a major label. Sputnik Music gave it a 5 out of 5, 3 out of 5 from Rolling Stone, 4.5 out of 5 from All Music. Absolute Punk said in their review, "By the second song, it is perceptible that the band has a grasp on crafting songs that do not follow a formula or insult the listener by maintaining a hold on one particular style or sound." Entertainment Weekly, in a B+ review, said, "Say Anything, an emo act based in LA, has a new disc that proves that the genre can be artful and intriguing." And a thing that I find interesting that I'll get into in a second is how so many reviews of emo at this time were like, "Oh, it can actually be good." Because I remember that happening with Black Parade as well. And I just think that was kind of maybe that's why the next one was In Defense of the Genre. BuzzFeed also included this on their list of 36 pop punk albums to hear before you die. So it is one of the sort of, maybe not one of the pillars of the genre, but definitely one of the support beams, if we're going with a construction metaphor.
Sure, we can go with the construction metaphor.
Say Anything would go on to release In Defense of the Genre in 2007, the self-titled record in 2009, Anarchy, My Dear in 2012, All My Friends Are Enemies, which compiles their early EPs and rarities, and I believe also Baseball in 2013. They released Hebrews in 2014, a very weird album with no guitars on it, and every song featuring guest singers from other bands, including aforementioned Gareth and Kim from Los Campesinos, Keith Buckley from Every Time I Die, his wife Sherry Dupree Bemis, Jeremy Bohm of Touche Amore, and the great Tom DeLonge of bands that you've probably heard of. They released I Don't Think It Is in 2016. And then last year in 2019, he released All Over Appropriate, which he considers to be a sequel to Is A Real Boy, or at least an album from the perspective of the same character that fronts Is A Real Boy. And after All Over Appropriate, Bemis claims that Say Anything is over, at least for now.
I didn't get that from All Over Appropriate, really. I didn't like it that much. I did like I Don't Think It Is in 2016. That's probably, like, since the self-titled, my favorite one of theirs and the one I spent the most time with. But
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it makes sense that they're at their end.
Yeah. I also didn't get the sequel thing until I read a long Vulture interview with him about how it's a sequel, or at least from the same character perspective. I will admit that, as I said off the top, it's kind of a weird band for me in that I love their first or second, I guess, record so much, and the rest doesn't do anything for me. I think you could make one really great CD out of the 27 songs on In Defense of the Genre, and I think each record since has like a good handful of songs I really like. I think Hebrews was a really interesting idea, but the thing I do like about him and his entire discography is how it's just a discography full of big swings, and they don't always they don't always connect, but I appreciate that he never sort of sat still and kind of just made Is a Real Boy for 20 years.
Yeah, I mean, he's extremely creative. Jake, do you mind if I do a Max Bemis aside here for a second?
Not at all.
So, quick question for you.
Okay.
Have you ever checked out the band Two Tongues?
No. That sounds familiar, though.
That is a Say Anything Saves the Day supergroup with both of them singing.
Really?
That I didn't know existed until I was prepping for this podcast.
That's kind of interesting because he quotes Through Being Cool a lot as an early influence on Say Anything. And I believe Chris Conley actually is one of the guests on Hebrews.
Not only is Chris Conley one of the guests on Hebrews, Max Bemis has quite the resume guesting on other people's songs. And this is where I wanted to go with this. On a song we will probably listen to on an episode one day, Bemis features on Ready by The Starting Line. He also has done vocals on two Motion City soundtrack songs. And yeah, and I mentioned, I pulled this ahead earlier, but I had it in my notes here too, that not only has he written Polarity about a bipolar superhero, he's also done some writing for Marvel. So that creativity, first of all, his vocal ability is getting used by his peers. And then that creativity and writing ability extending into the comic world, not unlike Gerard Way.
Yeah, I think the vocal note, I think, is really interesting too, because I think you're right. Like, as much as I don't think he has sort of the quote unquote emo voice, sort of like what we were talking about last week with Chris Carrabba, I do think in later emo years, you've heard a lot more of his sort of style, sort of like the emo voice or the wine rocker, as he calls himself, but with a bit of a gruffer edge to it. I think you can hear it even in stuff like Origami Angel, which I don't think sounds anything like Say Anything, but I think you can hear the influence there a lot.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, obviously Origami Angel, on some of the bonus episodes, we've talked about how they kind of pull from everywhere. But yeah, Say Anything would be, you know, an earlier idea of, yeah, we're just going to pull from everywhere and see if all these different things can work together. Jake, we're at the point in the podcast where we need to rank some songs from this album and pick one for the mixtape.
Yes, we do. My favorite song on this album is and always will be Belt, which kicks it off. I think a lot of that is nostalgia, just because I remember the first time I heard the album and I was expecting one thing, and then that song happened and I was like, oh, this is going to be something I like. And I do. I think Alive with the Glory of Love is the second best song, or my second favorite song, I should say, on this album. I would then go some combination of The Writhing South, Chia Like I Shall Grow, and Spider Song to round out my top five.
Man, not a lot of overlap for us.
Interesting.
Yeah, I like Spider Song. I had Alive with the Glory of Love at the top, Slowly Through a Vector, and Spider Song next. And then, like, I had in my notes, like, if we allow Bemis the kind of veil we've talked about, Every Man Has a Molly and Admit It are good songs, but I'm not sure, you know, that uncertainty alone about, like, how do we treat this? Do we trust that he was just doing a caricature and it was supposed to be kind of irony poisoned? Yeah, you can't get into the top three with those kind of qualifiers. So, Jake, we now have to pick one for the mixtape. I would think it's probably down to Alive with the Glory of Love or Belt. And since it's kind of your episode, I'll leave that to you.
Yeah, I think I'll go with Alive with the Glory of Love for this one. I know we talk a lot about, like, we don't always love going with the song that everybody knows from the album. But I do think that, as we were saying before, this is sort of I think this song represents the band better than anything else on the record.
For sure. And it's also like, it's not like this was such a ubiquitous single that people would be like, oh, this is expected on the on a mixtape. It's like, it's not, they were Say Anything in the early 2000s. It's not,
it was in Scrubs twice, so it's got to be worth something.
Yeah. What wasn't in Scrubs over the course of 9 seasons, though?
A That's, good point.
Yeah. Whoever did their music, come on the podcast.
Yeah, true.
All right. Alive with the Glory of Love makes it to the mixtape. At this point in the podcast, we would like to thank one of our Patreon supporters. And in this case, Jake, it's a good friend of yours, Andrew Wilson. Hey. So I'll let you take away the thank you.
I guess I will thank Wilson for both being a guest on the show and also supporting us on Patreon. And I hope that everything with your new little boy, Finn, is going well and that you and Allison are staying healthy. And hopefully we'll get to see you sooner rather than later.
Finn, that's the name of his son?
Yes, indeed.
Named after Finn Wolfhard, star of the Pup series of music videos.
Yeah, but only because of the Pup videos.
Yes. Also the person who gave Pup their digital Juno.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he presented. Also, Chris Boucher presented one of those, which really? Is hilarious. Yeah, huh. Yeah. Anyway, is that it for Say Anything, Jake? Do I transition us off here?
I think so. All right. I think that's about it.
In addition to Andrew Wilson, thank you to everyone else who supports us on Patreon. If you would like to be one of those people, patreon.com/Columbia House Party. Even if not, we still appreciate you. But please rate, review, subscribe, all that stuff. And we'll appreciate you a little bit more. We won't know necessarily, but you'll know. And you'll know that those that unspoken love from us to you is just a little stronger after you've done those things. All right. We have to transition to next week. We're going to keep it nice and simple here. Today, we discussed the band Say Anything. Next week, we're going to discuss a band who, in their most prominent song, say, "But I never say anything."
That was a good one.
Jake.
I like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for this, man. Next week, with a very special guest, we're talking Rilo Kiley.
Please try the fish.